welcome to this week's episode of Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after on CHRW 94.9 FM. So today we're going to talk about, some heavier topics. And I got to tell you that some people may be triggered for sexual violence and assault violence on this show. And if you may be a type of person that may be triggered by these topics, then I hate to send you away, but you can listen maybe more privately on your own later at www.betweenthemargins.ca on our blogs when you can comfortably shut the show off when it's convenient. So just put that out there, folks. Keep yourself safe in radio land. And I have some of the absolute powerhouse women that I have ever met in my entire life on the show today. And I am absolutely pumped to introduce three of these women that, this topic, and the topic is slut shaming. And I have on the air, I have Heather Jarvis, who is the founder of Slutwalk Toronto, which turned into an international phenomena, you know, working on these issues worldwide. I have Sarah Scanlon, who is community organizer here in London, has been doing workshops on this issue in schools. And let me tell you, I come in after her and do a presentation, and the kids just have nonstop great things to say about Sarah. She is one of the best speakers that I have ever come across in my life, and she's on the air with us here. And I have Bailey Lamond, who is Occupy London and community organizer and absolute fantastic. She works with the Women's Issues Network here at Western, and we have These three women, folks, have never been on the air together, and this is one treat. Hi, everyone.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
So, I have a clip here to introduce this show, and this clip is a 13-year-old girl talking about this issue, and it's going to set it up for us so we can have a conversation.
Slut-shaming is the unfortunate phenomenon in which people degrade or mock a woman because she dresses in tight or revealing clothing, enjoys sex, has sex a lot, or may even just be rumored to participate in sexual activity. The message that slut-shaming sends to women is that sex is bad, having sex with more than one person is horrible, and everyone will hate you for having sex at all. That message is complete and utter, excuse my French, bullshit. Yes, I'm 13 and I said the word bullshit. Yes, I'm 13 and I'm talking about slut-shaming. Deal with it. Anyway, if you've given your consent, if you're emotionally and physically ready for it, if you're using proper protection, and if you feel safe and comfortable with your partner, then sex is good. It is nobody's business but your own how many people you're having sex with or how much sex you have. And you don't deserve to be hated on for being sexually active with more than one partner. Slut-shaming also contributes to rape culture / rape supportive culture. Rape culture is a culture in which sexual violence against women is commonplace, and in which prevalent attitudes tolerate said sexual violence. Slut-shaming contributes to this by sending the message that it's okay to rape sluts, because by having too much sex or dressing in tight and revealing clothing, they're somehow asking for it. Rape is caused by rapists, misogyny, structural violence, and institutional tolerance. Not by women's clothing or makeup, not the way she talks or walks, not by her drinking, not by her not being careful enough, and certainly not by her being a slut. Sonia Barnett and Heather Jarvis said, "Being in charge of our sexual lives should not mean that we are opening ourselves to an expectation of violence, regardless if we participate in sex for work or pleasure. Slut-shaming takes away women's rights to express themselves sexually without fear of being scrutinized by men and other women, and it objectifies women's bodies. What I'm getting at here is that slut-shaming is wrong at any age. I'm noticing a lot of other girls my age starting to say it, and it just shocks me every time. How could they use such offensive language in such a casual manner? It's like they don't even know the meaning behind their words. And that's the thing. They don't know. Oh, if you watching this know somebody who slut-shames, pass this video along. they could learn something. I mean, it might not work, but how awesome would it be to change the opinion of even just one person? Simple actions can have the biggest impact. Hasta la vista.
So, Sarah, anything you want to add?
That was awesome. I'm really excited that exists in the world. I think that having young women in particular, like as much as I'm in my mid-20s and I'm really excited to talk about this issue, having like young women out there and being vocal is like the largest goal, I think, for many of us doing this kind of work, because, you know, peers educating them, educating each other, is like the best way to make impact. And she was beautifully eloquent, and she spoke to like literally like the most important issues around why this is a really dangerous issue. And it's not problematic just because people want to have sex. It's problematic because it actually creates a situation in which shame and silence surround sexuality and normalizes and increases risk for sexual violence. Like, this conversation as much for me as I'm a sex positive feminist and I really enjoy having sex. My biggest concern isn't about, you know, having sex. It's about the amount of like danger we bring to it when we attach such shame and silence and fear to notions of what healthy sexuality should look like.
What do you think, Bailey?
That was just awesome. I can't believe she's 13. Wow.
Like,
that was very inspiring to hear that from a young woman her age. I know when I was 13, like, you know, we never talked about sex in such a positive way. We're not even taught to think of sex in a positive way, right? Like, especially with young women, like, we're taught about the negative things that can come out of having sex. You know, we're not taught about pleasure. We're not taught how to feel comfortable with our bodies. And, you know, to hear a young woman that age, you know, to talk about such a sensitive issue, but also, you know, view sex as such a positive part of being human, that's just very inspiring to hear.
Heather?
Totally. Yeah, I remember when, I forget that 13-year-old's name, but I remember when that video became really big and circulated around, and it even, you know, it millions, no, maybe not millions, maybe that's me dreaming, thousands of people have definitely seen that video, and I love that they have, because not only does she explain it so simplistically, but eloquently, and really touches on highlight points that this is also a deep-rooted cultural systemic issue, rape culture. Of course, I was honored to be mentioned by a 13-year-old girl on YouTube. But what's great is, you know, I get into conversations a lot about language and slut shaming and how it happens. And on the one hand, yes, I want this to be eradicated. On the other hand, I have to be realistic and realize I don't know if that's even possible. This keeps happening. Some people are going to keep doing this. As we've seen with, you know, the suicides of a few teen girls recently, there are people who are going to be awful and slut-shaming after their death. And that's going to keep happening. So if that is the case, one place that I want to work on getting the youth on the receiving end of slut-shaming, is understanding that when this happens, it's not about them. It's about the people who are doing it and their ideas and why they feel entitled to treat other people so poorly. And it's not about you. It's built on, as she said, such bullshit that it doesn't matter who you are, what you wear, what you do, they're still going to do this to you. So if you can come to a place to understand that this is about them and not about you, yes, it hurts, but hopefully then you can understand that and move on. And it seems like she's putting that message out there.
I think another piece, like, I think that Heather really perfectly spoke to the, like, a big part of it, but I think another thing is really pushing, like, the, you know, the whole bystander, upstander piece, because something I've noticed since, like, you know, you women created the slut walk, which is, I'm so excited and proud to see that happening throughout the world, is that you see more and more young people, like when I'm working in the high schools, you know, talking positive about it. And when someone says a bad word or talks about slut in a negative way, there's someone else, there's a 13 or 14-year-old, 15-year-old, being like, you know, why is that a bad thing? And, like, pushing back. And I think that having, like, people around, people who are using that, because you're absolutely right, people are going to continue, because regardless of, you know, the movement, there's a way broader issue going on here around how we understand sexuality, how we understand women's, like, women's value, women's autonomy, women's worth. And, you know, I think that if we create more spaces for people to be able to not laugh or not encourage or walk away when they hear this kinds of language being taken up in a shameful, derogatory way, it creates so many more opportunities for, I guess, less of the mob mentality happening, particularly in high schools, like the, you know, the girl bashing, etc.
So let's throw it out there, because, you know, there is those two incidences that have happened recently, and, you know, I don't want to just highlight these two incidences, because I spent a lot of time in London at the hospital on the suicide ward, and there is never more than six or less than six or seven girls, typically girls, sometimes boys, but typically girls, sitting in that floor locked up for suicide attempts, and every single hospital everywhere has them, and it's... And those are the lucky ones, because they're the ones that actually survived. But in the case of Amanda Todd and Felicia Garcia, they didn't survive and made national news on that. And let's talk a little bit, because it's not their fault, and there's a lot of victim blaming going on.
Yeah. I mean, the victim blaming is just horrible, right? And we see it all the time. Like, I don't know how many times I, like, myself or just hearing a lot of adults say this to young women, like, respect yourself, or, you know, or just trying to set some kind of sexual standard for young women and putting all of that blame on them and, you know, basically making women feel ashamed for being sexual at all. And it's especially tragic with, I'm actually not familiar with Felicia Garcia's case, but with Amanda Todd, you know, I mean, we lost a young woman to this, and yet there are people out there who are still shaming her, who are still bashing her. And it's just, it's very, very tragic. And I think it says a lot about just our society and just the system we live in and just how screwed up that is overall.
I think that part of the piece for me around the victim blaming is that it's really difficult to watch, because for me it feels really based in fear. I mean, people are really, in North America, people are really fearful of sexuality in general. But when you attach it to things like sexual violence, etc., the victim blaming that comes in around that, I think, is it's really, really relevant to how people want to not have to actually look at themselves and how they participate in behaviors that I guess add to this or like normalize this. So if someone experiences some form of sexual violence or some form of violence in any form attached to their sexuality, how people, it's a lot easier to pinpoint particular behaviors that person acted upon or behaved in that made that behavior, like, what made that be caused, like, how that was reflective of something that they did wrong. You know, like, as a young person, we get those pamphlets being like, if you carry your rape whistle, or if you, you know, keep your hair cut short or keep keys tucked between your fingers, which obviously is problematic because it associates only with stranger danger, sexual violence. But it's more around the broader issue that if people don't have to actually think about what happened to these young women and what keeps happening to these young women, that it becomes an issue of a personal issue, which is, we live in a neoliberal culture and it's a lot easier to do that. But also no one has to actually look at themselves and think, how can I change my behaviors to stop this from happening? How can I, you know, not participate in normalization of sexual violence and the slut shaming that happens? I used to work at a rape crisis center, and one of the most, like, tragic stories that we were working on, or one of the most tragic stories I was a part of, was of a young woman who committed suicide. She was a rape survivor, and she committed suicide a year after she was sexually assaulted. And she was raised in a really religious family who really taught her that her virginity was, you know, where her value lies and what was her, like, I guess her worth to bring to a relationship. And so once she was sexually assaulted, when she was raped, she really felt as though she had nothing left to offer her future relationships. And, like, that to me is the most, like, frightening thing ever, that's what we're teaching young women, that what they have to offer the world in their relationship is solely their sexuality. And that if they don't have, you know, like, the thing, or the notion on the purity balls, around the conversations happening about, you know, women who have sex, every time they have sex with someone, they lose their value, they lose their their like attractiveness to male partners if they're heterosexual, is some of the most like problematic language and discourse that gets taken up, because it teaches women that they have nothing left to offer the world other than this one little piece of skin.
I would completely agree that, and what's so frustrating, I'm sorry, I'm getting over cold. What's so frustrating is that we've been seeing this for years and years and years, and people have been pointing this out and saying, look, here's a big problem about the ways that we talk about gender and we talk about sexuality, the ways that we talk about women's value and how girls, even young girls, their value is based on being sexually desirable, but they have to remain sexually inexperienced and ignorant,
yep,
which doesn't go together. But we've been talking about this and acknowledging it for such a long time, and we're still facing the same issues. And now they're finding even new angles and corridors and corners to get into, especially with the internet, especially with increased social media. A lot of systems I don't think have even caught up with how to deal with what's happening online in all of these different corners. And then it's also at school, and then it could be at home, and what's happening at school is coming home. And it's really frustrating because we are still facing these messages that, just as you said, girls are valued based on their sexuality, and that's all that it is. And most of the time, men do not face nearly close to this kind of sexual standard. Men can, just with the Felisa Garcia case, the sort of big reports were that she slept with four guys from her school at a party on the same night. And this is the leading piece of the story, which one doesn't, it shouldn't be any sort of excuse for her bullying. And two, so those other men also participated in this, but didn't face any ramifications. Not at all. Clear indication that this is sexism and misogyny built in continuously in what's happening. And the part that's also frustrating a lot of people, and many people spoke out about this around the Amanda Todd case in Canada and BC, was that major media is discussing how harmful bullying is. Bullying. We see this word all the time. And this word sometimes is part of the problem because it you know, scoops over all of what's happening and just gives it one big title of bullying. And we're not addressing how it's happening. How this bullying is happening is sexism, is misogyny, is slut-shaming. And when other bullying is happening, you know, we're calling it homophobia, we're calling it transphobia. Calling it bullying is not going to solve the problem because we're not understanding how the problem is actually happening and continuing.
Let me read you one comment off of the internet here, and I think it itemizes some of it, and it says, but it's not fair to blame it on people who made fun of her. It was her choice, made on her terms. Blaming these kids just make girls like her into martyrs. She gets the outpouring of compassion, and her taunters are labeled as horrible people when they're probably no more than your average, cruel high school kids, and she'll never know it. But other kids see this, and it makes it seem like a good idea. The only way they can be vindicated, and it is sick and sad. The tragedy here is her death at her own hands. No one else caused that.
What? I completely disagree.
Obviously.
I mean, there's a lot in there that there are pieces in there that I would say I agree with. I think, it's awful that there's so many cases I can pull on right now from recently. So we have these two cases of these two young teenage girls who committed suicide after not only bullying, I'm putting that in quotation marks in my living room, but slut-shaming and sexism and misogyny. But we also have the case in Toronto, if I'll just give it a quick rundown if people are unfamiliar, a case in Toronto where there were multiple sexual assaults happening along the streets, particularly in the Bloor and Christie area. And I don't know the final total. I think it was something like 14 sexual assault stranger attacks on the street. And recently they apprehended somebody who they found was really the person responsible. He was 15. And a lot of people were really taken aback by that. And I remember that the morning that this story broke about this 15-year-old boy who was responsible, and a lot of people were saying, well, it's awful that his name is being protected because he's so young. We can't even identify who did this. Well, at least he's going to jail. This is rightful. This is good. This is what we need. And I was caught with feeling very torn about, yes, when somebody is apprehended, when you can identify who's done this, there is a kind of of relief for a lot of survivors. On the other hand, this 14-year-old, this 15-year-old boy is being sent right into a system, a police system, a justice system, that actively ignores rape and brutalization to those in their care. So this cycle is continuing and continuing and continuing. And we cannot view the people who do these things as simply monsters and horrible people, and that's the end. They are people who have humanity, who experience love and respect and joy and pain, and they need to be called out, but we can't just dehumanize them and put them to the side, because that's pretending like they aren't a part of our broader culture, which they are. And we need to have those conversations.
I couldn't agree with Heather more. I think that point is, like, really, I think brilliantly articulates, I guess, some of the same conversations around victim blaming, like, even associated when you look at how we, I guess, pick apart instances of sexual violence or sexism, is that we like to target individual people rather than understanding that those people were, like, they didn't exist in a silo, and they're raised in the culture that they're taught, this is how we exist, and this is what it is, like this is a part of your life. So as a woman, it is going to be part of your life to experience sexual violence daily as you move through your existence, regardless of what you're wearing, regardless of your age. This is a part of your entity. And for men, it is a part of their life to sexually assault and sexually oppress women and also other men. And I think that's a piece that we don't talk about enough. And by that I mean that, you know, one of the primary ways to degrade a man and to take away a man's masculinity is to treat him as a feminine person or as a feminine entity, or to sexually assault or harass him, because that's the notion of that a real man can experience that. And so I think that the your point around the prison system, Heather, is, like, so, so important. It does not happen enough, in the fact that we send people for, well, very rarely, but we do sometimes send people for acting out sexual violence, which is a really big problem, and they need to be dealt with. The problem is that society shames them without ever once looking at how they participated and normalized that. And they said, you know, good on you, boy, for that one time that you, you know, pressured that girl to have sex. But when you get caught as a young person 15 times acting this way, that's completely your ownership. But then we send them into a system that in no way acknowledges the mass amount of sexual violence continuously happening within the prison system. And we teach them that it's a part of the system and it's okay.
Yeah, once we start to make excuses and once we start to make excuses and exceptions for rape, we open the door to anybody being able to do that. And people all the time think that prison rape is justified and funny and okay.
It's funny, exactly.
And that continues the idea of, well, there's always a justification, there's always an exception. AKA, if you're a slut, if you've done something that I don't like, I can treat you this way and rape is not a problem.
If you're one of the marginalized in society, then you're not really a victim of sexual violence, because you some way deserved it.
Bailey?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with both Sarah and Heather. Something I struggle with personally is, like, I mean, with the whole issue of, like, how to deal with people, well, men in particular, for the most part, who cause sexual violence, such as the young man from Toronto, the 15-year-old from Toronto, just, you know, because, I mean, obviously, jail and, you know, like, the justice system, that's not stopping these things. That's not stopping sexual violence. It's, so I think, just, I don't know, that's something I struggle with, is, like, yeah, I mean, there has to be some kind of, like, we need to do something about it. Like, there needs to be some kind of consequence for these people. But, at the same time, is, like, at what point is it, like, I mean, there's punishing people, you know, slap on the wrist, and then there's, like, actually addressing the problem and actively trying to solve the problem and learn from it and try to make change that way. So, I mean, just something, yeah, like, that's something I struggle with personally, is, like, what do we do about this? Like,
I very much do as well, Bailey. You know, we grow up in this system that tells us that the right way to deal with bad behavior and these sorts of violent actions is punishment, and is punishment through a police system, through the you know, prison industrial complex, which is a term that is often used in activism to really refer to the systemic built up institutions around prison and justice and law and courts. And that this is what we know. So it's really hard to conceive of another way to deal with this. But you know what? Communities deal with it all the time. There are
Hello?
Police, and people are not going to jail.
Yeah, as a survivor myself, who the perpetrator is at large. He perpetrated the crimes against me and attacked me in a foreign country and then came back to Canada. And, I mean, yeah, I want something to happen to him, but I want him not to do this anymore more than I want him in jail. Because no matter how long you lock somebody up, they're getting out. And they're going to come out, you know, worse off than they went in. And, you know, the restorative justice isn't going to happen in that system. And, you know, I just never want to have to worry about this individual again. And, you know, locking up forever would be one solution, but just making sure it doesn't happen again would be a much more favorable for me.
Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of survivors, that's the real dilemma. Like in my past experience working with the Rape Crisis Center, we really did not encourage people to go to the police with their experiences because, well, number one, not only very rarely do charges get put through, but it's an extremely victimizing process. So, like, not only is it, like, often not effective, but also the folks who are trying to actually participate in the system's process, they actually experience a lot of trauma in that process. And then outside of that, when you look at how we, like, I guess, kind of understand sexual violence, we're not actually dealing with any of the issues. And so I think for a lot of people, they really struggled and they're on either side of a battle of all they really care about. Like, it's not about punishment. It's not about someone being in jail. It's about the reason why most survivors come forward is because they don't want someone else to do it. They don't want someone else to experience that. And that's a really hard piece for a lot of women in particular around the fact that they feel like if they stay silent, then they're responsible for someone else experiencing sexual violence. But the system does not in any way support them in those steps to try and create a safer community. And in fact, just almost teaches perpetrators how to be better perpetrators.
Exactly. And we're going to continue this conversation with Bailey, Heather, and Sarah after these few commercial breaks here, talking about slut shaming.
We are all in this together, brothers and sisters. We can.
And we're back to Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after on CHRW Radio 94.9 FM. I do want to put it out there to the audience. Once again, we're talking about some pretty serious, sensitive topics, and we're not talking about butterflies and roses. And if you're the type of person who feels that it might be best not to talk about issues or listen to issues around sexual violence, then please go to www.betweenthemargins.ca and listen to the show at your convenience when you can take care of yourself in a private environment. And I have the powerhouse women here. I'm calling them the power team. I've got Bailey Lemon, Sarah Scanlon, and Heather Jarvis, and we're talking about slut shaming. And, you know, the male voice is missing on this show, but I'm going to bring that in with a clip here.
I remember the first time someone said to me, it's different. It's different meaning men and women. It's different meaning our actions. It's different meaning I as a man can cheat, sleep around, have sex with half a lower Manhattan, but if a woman does it, it's different. It's not different, I said. My friend looked back at me as if I was a child, a wide-eyed ignorant fool who didn't know any better. So if your sister slept with 10 guys tomorrow, you wouldn't care? I responded, if my sister slept with 100 guys tomorrow, it would be no different than if I slept with 100 women tomorrow. Men are raised as champions. High fives in the workplace and at the club. Taught to be proud of what we curse at women from birth. Like the first time I remember how effortlessly the word slut and whore rolled off a man's tongue. The discomfort I felt. While still working out my own inconsistencies and hypocrisies, it is different. There's no equivalent to whore or slut for a sexually active man. No word that seeks to debase, discredit, abuse, rap, and sexual violence. We're still conditioned to ask if a raped woman provoked it. Juries want to see inside her underwear drawer. We judge women in terms of promiscuity, type of dress, innocuous green lights, as mouths, lips, whispers, alcohol levels cry no. It's different is the unspoken status. The wrong type of woman is called a prostitute. You wouldn't marry her, be near her, respect her. Something different from our mothers, our sisters, our partners, just for quickies and one-night stands, because it's different. But if the mistaken notion is true, men are from Mars and women are from Venus, I still don't want Mars to be sexist and promote sexual violence and call it a difference and makeup. This is just how things are. It's a poor excuse for an action. I want to live in a world 15 years from now where I can tell my kids the way things are today, it's different. Gender equality aren't mere words on a page. Consent is second nature. Sexual violence isn't promoted as the accepted norm. It's different, meaning a statement of progress forward. It's different, meaning world of possibility activated. It's different, meaning if enough of us question our choices and address our actions, we can actually make a difference.
Heather?
That was awesome.
Yeah, I love
hearing men talk about this stuff because it's so necessary and so important, and because the reality is that men talking about this stuff, particularly heterosexual men, can reach men and boys in a different way than women talking about this stuff can, unless you're specifically close to that one man, that one boy. And men can talk about this from their perspective, which really challenges men and boys to say, like, wait a minute, I usually hear this from women and I can brush them off, but now you're telling me this. This is coming at me from a different place and a different kind of legitimacy. And I love hearing it, and that was really amazingly done.
Absolutely. That was just awesome. I love it as well when men speak out about this issue. It actually reminds me of something I saw on Facebook recently. I'm not sure where it originally came from, but it just said men should be insulted. Men should feel insulted and offended when someone says that women should dress a certain way or act a certain way in order to prevent rape, because that implies that they're so, you know, they can't control themselves, they're uncivilized, and I think that just really summed it up nicely. That men need to be able to take responsibility and be able to speak out about these issues. And it's a human problem. It's a human struggle, and it's not just a woman's struggle. It's we need men just as much as we need our sisters to speak out about this.
I think I have a couple thoughts on this. I think that, you know, my first thought obviously is it's always just nice to hear people in general talking about this, because there's so much silence and shame around this issue that it's just nice, period, to hear someone discussing this. I also agree that it is nice to have different kinds of voices, including men, because I think that men talking about it makes it more accessible, in some ways even safer for other men to hear about it. I think that, you know, this is exactly what you said, this is a human issue, and that we need all folks involved, and the more and more we make it, you know, a woman's issue, the more and more it becomes, the victim blaming and that kind of stuff comes into play. I have two thoughts outside that, though. I think the reason why it's actually most important for me is the fact that we often don't really recognize that men are also docile bodies, and they're expected to be hypersexual. And so this conversation can be framed in a different way, that in the same capacity, if men are not hypersexual, if they're not constantly participating in the male gaze, then they're judged and they're really put down and they're seen as less than as people. So if they're not actually participating in being like sexual all the time and actually sexually oppressive all the time, then they're seen as not being, you know, masculine enough. Whereas women are taught they're supposed to be sexy but not sexual, right? So the notion of the ones that act upon things is the one expectations of men. And so I think it's really great to have men talk about this and talk about the fact that, you know, equally, it's not cool, this binary notion around sexuality and who's supposed to act and who's supposed to remain passive and a visual. But I think one piece for me that I think that I just kind of want to name, because I guess my own politics or my own something, is that I really love hearing men talk about this stuff. What I don't love is how much more, like, space and appreciation men get when they talk about this stuff. So you could have 12 women say the exact same thing, but when a man says it, we're falling all over ourselves for him. And so I want to, you know, obviously say that I really appreciate and I love my male brothers in the activist community and the queer community who continuously, you know, are allies and support this and also take this on as an issue that's close to them. What I don't love is when the community itself acts like they're like God's gift to us, because of course they should be talking about this issue. This issue affects everyone, and it's gross that they don't talk about this issue. And so that's my little rant.
Yeah, I completely agree with Sarah. I mean, I guess it's just because, like, the patriarchal society we live in, like, it's more, I guess it's just less common, I guess, for men to speak out about it. So I guess that's why it seems like a really big deal when it does happen. But I mean, you make a really good point that like they should be talking about it.
And even that dynamic of people who've said this so many times before, and then some person of a different identity coming out and saying it, who gets all the credit and appreciation. That happens all the time through all of the different intersections of our identities. It happens all the time when white women get credit for saying things, even like myself. I've gotten credit for saying some of the things that Slutwalk has taken up, where I'm going, no. This has been done by so many women before me, women who are Indigenous, women who are women of color, people in queer communities, trans women, sex workers who have fought language, who have fought these horrible, you know, discriminatory and oppressive ideas, and we frequently erase the voices of people who've done this work for such a long time before us.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Heather, because when we were listening actually to the male speaker, I was thinking about how, you know, the conversation of it's different, and about how for particularly women of color, racialized women, Indigenous women, how, like, slut-shaping is so a part of their experience of oppression, because, like, slut-shaming is intrinsic to colonization. Like, it's intrinsic to racism, and, like, how we see women of color, racialized women, is their, like, their entity is these eroticized, hypersexual bodies, whereas white women are presented as these, like, Victorian, you know, passive, innocent, virginal people or folks, whereas, like, women of color, their whole identity is wrapped up in them being hypersexual, so that whole conversation around the fact that they're, like, statistically so much more likely to experience sexual violence and street harassment, because it's really completely built into our understanding of colonization and racism, how we view these bodies. And so when women of color speak about these issues, it gets silenced as an issue of racism, and it's not peeled apart and looking at the way in which sexism is so, like, massively a part of how we see these communities often, and how they often get silenced, particularly women in these communities.
Well, last year, my daughter was in grade 8, and as the weather started getting warmer and, you know, the clothing became more skimpier in the school, the principal made an announcement on the PA to remind all of the girls in the school that, you know, appropriately following the dress code was crucial so that they could, because otherwise they were just a distraction for the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens in every school, every single spring that I've ever been a part of.
Oh my God.
When I was in high school, there was a rule in my high school, women couldn't have their bra straps showing, so they couldn't have thin strap tank tops because, as you said, it was distracting for men. And also, the language was used that men couldn't control themselves. And Bailey, you spoke to a piece that you saw. I actually had that piece posted on Facebook also. But the reason I used to work with male perpetrators, and the reason why that is so frightening to me, is because we're, like, institutionalizing into our education system that, like, as a part of the language that women, you need to cover yourselves up because men are so distracted and they can't control themselves that they have to act out sexually towards you. That this is the exact same language that gets taken up when I worked with perpetrators of gender-based violence. And that's, like, it's like the fact that it's normalized and put over a PA system and put into like newsletters that go home to our family, and everyone just says, "Oh yeah, that's valuable. That's like that's that makes sense." Is really frightening.
Yeah. oh my God. I don't even know where to start, really. Oh my God, I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sorry.
Well, maybe we should get men blinders.
Yeah, I think that
horse blinders.
Yeah, this is something that we see all the time. It's putting the onus where it doesn't belong. And so often, especially with having conversations about slut-shaming, I'm sure everybody who's on the show, and many, many people who are listening, will find this a common experience they've had before. When somebody talks about slut-shaming and they're trying to say, yeah, it's wrong, but... You know, but I don't want to let my daughter leave the house dressed that way. I'm not going to do that. Would you? Well, what about the young girls in our culture? Like, how do we have these conversations with them? We need to teach them what's okay and what's not okay. And constantly there's somebody who's wonderful who's going, okay, lessons are you teaching your son then? I'm sorry. So before your daughter goes out, you're having this horrible conversation with her that's shaming her and teaching her that she's just a sexual piece of meat. And the conversation with your son, can you tell me a little bit about that? Oh, what conversation? Yeah, you need to be talking to your sons and your brothers and your peers who are male about when you leave the house, you are not allowed to objectify and sexualize women as if they are not worthy of your respect or they are not worthy of safety. No, cut it out. Stop it. Let's talk about this. We're missing this whole other aspect of the conversation to have. And countless times people are saying, but the daughters, but the slutty clothes that they're wearing. And there's no mention of the sons.
Yeah, I don't know how many arguments I've had with people over the past few months about where they claim that men are natural born rapists. And it's very hard not to just like not to freak out on these people. I have to try very hard not to do that. I think you summed it up really nicely, Heather. Like, we need to have these conversations with boys and men and stop shaming young girls and mm-hmm. making them feel ashamed for having bodies, basically.
Yeah, well, what about the distracted piece, right? Because sometimes it's not about everybody's born rapist, but you're distracting the poor boys.
Oh, no.
And, you know, they're not able to get an education because they're distracted.
Yeah, and the way that we position who's right to not be distracted and whose education is really being disrupted, that's a big part of that as well, especially at the sort of high school and elementary school age. When it comes down to what they're essentially trying to get at is you're distracting the boys, which is taking away from their education, which is something that we could all get on board with. Yeah, people's education is important. And they're not acknowledging that the harassment girls and women are having to face and the fact that they have to think about everything that they're wearing, everything that they're doing. Am I going to be a distraction? Am I going to be stepping out of line? Am I going to be held responsible for this? That's distracting in your education.
Also, even feeling like you're being watched all the time, because women are constantly being looked at and being viewed and being judged by what they're wearing, how they look, how their hair looks, how their breasts look, like when they lean over. And like, how is that not distracting that every second of the day, like the male gaze, we are taught that the male gaze is a part of our normal experiences. And that's what's actually most important, like, about you being at school, is you looking good for other people, not about, you know, how awesome you did on your English exam.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to take that as a compliment. Like, if we're being stared at and it's making us uncomfortable or we get hit on or, you know, just harassed in any way or whatever, you know, like, we're, as women, we're supposed to take that as a compliment. You know, we're supposed to take that as, like, oh, you look good. You're attractive. Good job, you know, like, and... It's just outrageous, just how we're taught to think of these things.
I think that in general, that point, Bailey, is that if women are taught that if they're not thankful for receiving male attention, then they're bitches.
Yeah, they're basically.
Cold, and they're ice queens, and there's something wrong with them.
And they're dykes.
Literally physically wrong with them if they're not grateful. Like, so thankful and grateful that men want to yell things at them and comment on their body and stare at them. Just because they want to move through their lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's that Facebook meme, right? There's, you know, if a woman says no to sex, then she's being confrontational and obstructive. If she says yes, she's a slut. You know, if she wants to use birth control, you know, that's an issue. But if she wants an abortion, that's also an issue. And, you know, where are women supposed to position ourselves in this conversation?
Yeah, young single moms are still one of the most, like disregarded and, like, judged communities, but yet, if they want to take any actual agency over their own sexual autonomy, then they're sluts.
Mm-hmm.
And irresponsible.
Yeah, and I've heard you talk about this multiple times, the virgin whore dichotomy. Like, either... You know, it's like you're expected... It's like you said earlier, like, sexy but not sexual. But if you have any, you know, if you are comfortable with your sexuality and if you are sexual at all, then all of a sudden, you know, you're a slut or you're a whore and that's bad. And, you know, I just think, I mean, it's a cycle, right? Like, it's just, everything is just so connected and, it's angering.
Another element that I want to bring up about sort of slut shaming that I see that is, you know, another level of frustration is, you know, sometimes it's maybe call it easier is the only word I can pull on right now to have these conversations and see people who are committing slut-shaming and sexism and misogyny and people who are receiving it. And but once we live and acknowledge that our communities are so multiple and overlapping, one thing that we're seeing over and over and over again is that when things like racism are being called out, when things like sexism are being called out, when things like, you know, homophobia are being called out, the people who have been the people enacting those oppressions, the response to them is often one, if they're female ever at all, the response to them is often one that includes slut-shaming and sexism. For example, mm-hmm. Roseanne Barr, the comedian and actress, so apparently she's running for a political party in the States, and she recently tweeted some things that were really, really, you know, trans-misogynistic, transphobic. They were awful. But the response to her from some other people about, it's so awful that you're doing this, is you're a whore, you're a slut, you're just a cunt. There was another woman in the States, in New York, who, a white woman who was really called out recently for going around and wearing a big afro and saying that her life was changed by wearing this afro, and she was called out for racism about, you're using this as a costume, it's not okay. But the people, many of the people were doing a brilliant job. But then also other people who were calling her out on racism, again, the same tactics. You're a slut, you're a whore, you're just a useless cunt. And this is happening, it's happened in Occupy, it's happened in lots of progressive communities, where when people are being challenged on their oppression, good, great, yes. Doing it with further oppression, bad. And it needs to stop. But people feel justified in turning to something like slut shaming more than, I think, ableism and slut shaming are the ones that I see the most.
Yeah.
When people are being called out on their oppression, sometimes people will turn to these oppressions to feel justified in their anger. And it's a massive problem.
Yeah.
And I actually had a conversation a little while ago about kind of discrimination because I have done a lot of research in the past, like 2 years around, the community I feel most disappointed with is the activist, anarchist, feminist, queer community and their response to sexual violence and slut-shaming. That's how they, you know, a community that's supposed to be part of their and big goals around ending violence just don't even recognize how, like, sexual violence and gender-based oppression are just so important to this conversation around other forms of oppression and violence, right? And I was talking to Ben a little while ago about this experience I had at Pride. I was walking into the Queers Against Apartheid group, and there was, you know, some men on either side of the parade with signs that were really obviously homophobic, like, you know, people from religious backgrounds who have an issue with queer identities and were saying stuff, and we were walking past them. We happened to get paused, and one of the young anarchist men in the community, his response in trying to, like, push back on this guy who was being homophobic was to yell at him, I'm going to rape you, I'm going to find you, and I'm going to rape you. And he yelled it over and over and over at him until I literally, like, pushed him and said, get away from us. That, like that is sexual violence. That is homophobia. That there's all the same conversation. How can you not? And it's more like watching how people in our community, like, to thinking that they're being protective or allies or being working to end oppression, then are using the exact same, like, forms of hierarchy and violence. Like, which is all the same intrinsic conversation as a way to punish them or threaten them.
Yeah, I think, oh my God, like, I really like how both of you mentioned, like, the activist community, just because, like, that's, I think that is a huge problem right now. And I think something we need to understand is that, like, these problems that we see and criticize don't just magically go away when we become socially conscious. And we need to understand that these things are just as big of a problem in activist communities as they are outside of them. And we really need to start calling people out on that. Like, we really need to, as activists, start understanding how these traits manifest themselves in our communities, even though we like to think of our communities as progressive and, you know, as not having these problems. But they do, and that's the reality.
Yeah, we're all in a broader social culture of learning these lessons, and a lot of what we have to do is unlearn them, which takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
So it's true, you know, I think a lot of people, including myself, were kind of demystified when I thought, okay, I'm in this wonderful community who uses a certain language and has a certain awareness, and, you know, really being taken aback that, right, things just don't disappear because people have to do a whole bunch of unlearning throughout their lives.
Yeah.
And I think the main message that, you know, I want to get out that I think we're all supporting is people have to call each other on this stuff, no matter what communities you're in. In high school, people need to call out bullying, slut-shaming, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, you know, racism, colonialism. Yeah. They have to call out all of these forms of oppression, however they understand them at their age, when they see them. We have to call it out in the media. We have to call it out in our educational systems and our police systems. And we have to call it out in our own communities, whether they be queer or activist or feminist. The calling out has to not stop, and we have to find ways to do it that don't further forms of oppression. Yes, people
Absolutely.
Need to be held accountable when they perpetuate yeah. transphobia and racism and, you know, rape culture, but they don't need to be held accountable in ways that is further, you know, taking away any kind of respect or safety that they might deserve.
Quick last thoughts, Sarah?
Pardon?
Quick last thoughts.
I was just going to say that I think that I'm really glad you brought that point, Heather. I think that one more piece on top of that I think is, I mean, obviously always encouraging everyone to speak up, act up, but I think that something even more difficult is be open to listening and open to hearing. And that's something that, like, for me even personally, like, I have to work on constantly, is that, you know, having someone speak up to you is so awesome and takes so much courage and so important, but we need to all, as activists, as community members, be ready to listen and hear and not get our backs up and not be defensive, because we are wrong often. We do make mistakes. And I want to say, Heather, that I really respect the Slut Walk movement and how, you know, there was some pushback by racialized women and sex workers around just how some things happen. And my experience, at least, is that, you know, you women really heard and you really listened and you really tried to respond in a respectful way. And I think that, you know, we can all take note from that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Last thoughts, Bailey?
I don't think I have anything more to add, but I think Heather and Sarah just kind of summed all of that up perfectly. Like,
wonderful.
At the end there.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for having us, Michelle, and for hosting this conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all for coming on board.
For this dialogue to happen.
And I hope that this is the beginning of the conversation, not the end. I mean, you've had the opportunity, listening audience, to hear the voices of some of the most powerful women talking about this subject. And hopefully you can take this back into your own places, your own communities, and your own, you know, your own thought patterns and social groups, and continue this conversation, because we need to continue talking about this. And thank you so much, all of you, for being on the show. This has been Between the Margins, a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. I am Michelle Boyce. Thank you so much to Kim Gocho on the board, pushing the buttons in her way, the good way. And for all of you out there in Radio Land, I hope you have your happily ever after, whatever that means to you.